Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
The MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network is presented by WynnBET. WynnBET is now live in Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, Virginia, and Arizona. From boosted parlays to in-game odds on every major sport, WynnBET has what you need to win. Sign up today to receive a $1,000 risk-free sports bet. Download the WynnBET app now or visit WynnBET.com and start winning today. We're also brought to you by PropSwap, America's marketplace to buy and sell sports bets. Check out the new PropSwap.com and use promo code SGP on your first deposit to receive up to $500 in bonus cash. And finally, we're brought to you by PrizePicks. PrizePicks is DFS simplified. Head on over to PrizePicks.com and use promo code SGP for a 100% instant deposit match up to $100. And of course, before you start this episode, make sure to download the SGPN app because it is your home for all of our free picks, podcasts, and oh so much more. Download it wherever it is you download your apps.
Hi-yo, Degenerinos, and welcome to the MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. Made it up to episode 88. I've been on almost all of them, 83 of them, I think. My associate co-host has been on, is the only person who's been on all 88 episodes. That's a trivia question for you. This really is his podcast, even though I always claim that it's mine. I would be Jeff Fox, your host, by the way. We won't introduce him quite yet. This episode is dedicated to a very, very special person who is celebrating a birthday today. It's a happy born day to Superfan Jong from the Sports Gambling Podcast Slack channel. Jong, I hope you have a wonderful birthday. You're our number one fan, and I know you are listening in and waiting to hear our picks because we are going to have some picks on this podcast. It's not just going to be a review podcast, bragging about how great we did on the weekend podcast. We do actually have some more bets for the degenerates out there like Jong. Jong wanted to put it out there to all our Eastern European women that listen to the podcast, more specifically Romanian women. I know we have quite a few Romanian women listening to the podcast that Jong is single and interested. So, I think my associate hosts, I think we made the over-under on women not related to us listening to the podcast at about 1.5. So hopefully one of those, the one woman that listens to the podcast that's not related to us is actually Romanian, and she's into Jong. I'll tell you a little bit about him. From what I can gather, he's a big gambler. Women always love degenerate gamblers, so that's a plus there. He loves to eat. So he really loves food, and I don't think he sleeps ever, just by his activity on the SGPN Slack channel, and all different hours of the day he's posting. So I'm pretty sure he doesn't sleep. He definitely eats, and he definitely gambles, and he definitely listens to us. So anyhow, have a good day, Jong, and hopefully that Romanian princess that you're looking for hits you up very soon. All right, enough of that. Enough tooting other people's horns. One thing that doesn't happen enough in this podcast is I don't get enough credit. All I hear everywhere I go is how great my associate host is at picking fights. And yeah, he's good. He's better than most people for sure. But you know who he's not better than? He's not better than me. I went 12-2 last weekend. So that's not a fluke. The past 2 weeks, I'm at 82%. 3 weeks, I'm at 76%. Go back 5 weeks, I'm at 73% hit rate. Now, that deserves some respect. As the kids would say, put some respect on my name. That's all I'm saying. And I'm begging for it. But, yeah, my associate host, yeah, sure, he hit a plus 1,300, six-fight parlay or something like that this past weekend. But I deserve some respect, too. Okay? And that associate co-host would be the one and only – the man who can go 10-4 and still get beat. You went 10-4 two weekends in a row and still got beat by me. Daniel Gumby Vreeland. Hello.
Yeah, but you win. You know, you got the more picks right. Granted, the three pick difference here was three chalky guys versus me going with upsets, and we'll get into some of those picks.
Oh, I made money though. You didn't.
Man, that is crazy at 10-4. That just proves this game plan that we've laid out, where you have to bet $100 on every fight. It's dumb.
Yes.
Because if you can pick as right as I did this weekend and still not make money, that is crazy silly. But that being said, you can have that win today, because I'm flying high, because it was only a 5-fight parlay. My 5-fight plus 1300 parlay, not only did that hit, but also if you guys were following along to my props as well, I gave you two props. I gave you Chris Huggy Bear Barnett by knockout at plus 250. That one hit. And I gave you Alex Pereira by knockout, which was only negative like 115 or something like that. But that one hit as well. So, you know, just hitting on top of hitting on top of hitting last night. So regardless of whether or not the ultimate victory belongs to you, I'm still pretty pumped. I still think I did pretty well.
All we do is win over here. Hashtag winning. What were the odds on Huggy Bear doing after the match, doing a front flip into a split?
I would have to say if you're getting given the fact that he wins, I would say that celebration was probably negative 300, because if you've seen Huggy Bear fight before, that shit was expected. Like, I don't know if you got to see the dance when they were cutting the commercial too, perhaps better than the front flip right to his butt cheeks as he did. Yeah, we could talk. I could put a whole hour, by the way, on his celebrations. Did you hear what he said about that front flip when one of the reporters asked him backstage?
Remind me, I may have.
He said, "You can blame those damn trampoline places for giving a fat guy like me confidence."
No, I didn't hear that. Yeah. That's great, though.
One of the best responses I've ever heard in my life. Plus, he gives the moment to Jean Volante and all of that. Dude, man, I can't say enough about how much I love that, too.
And on any other weekend, on what, 50 other weekends of the year, he would have been the star of the show, but no, he was nowhere near the top of the list for this past weekend, because that was a wild, wild event, UFC 268, that would be. And yeah, Dan went 10-4, lost $29. He went 10-4 the week before and only won 57. So yeah, our
it's been chalky lately, that's why.
Yeah, I know. But on the year, may as well, hey, kidding this right now, on the year you're at 55%, which is, you know, which is solid. It should be, you know, you would think you're up a little bit of money or close to even. No, you're down almost $3,500. So, yeah, betting, I don't know. I don't know if we'll switch. I'm sure people don't really care whether or not we're down pretend money or not. If the hosts are down, they just want to know. They just want to know who we think are going to win. But I'm not sure if we should change the approach for next year or not. But anyhow, we will have some dead weeks coming up at the end of next month. We can figure that stuff out. But, yeah. 55%, you're still down $3,500. I'm at 60%, which is what I was gunning for. And after my hot what month or month and a half, I am up to 60%, and I'm still down $2,100. So, $100 in every fight. You know, it's fun to have action in every fight, but you may want to change the amount you're betting, or like do an awesome parlay like Dan threw out there. Like my brother said, I told him that you hit it. He's like, yeah, it's crazy. It sounded like he was just like throwing random people in at the end of it too. I'm like, yeah, I don't know.
No,
he's like, let's put this guy in and let's put that guy in.
The only one that I was hesitant on putting in, because for those who need a quick recap, I took Chris Barnett, who I had pretty much chewed his horn leading in. I took Ian Gary, who I'm sure we'll talk a ton about. I took Nassourdine Imavov, who looked really good. I took Alex Pereira, who maybe didn't look good with the takedown defense, but is a crazy good kickboxer. I was pretty confident on those four, but, you know, we usually like to make it. Well, I said I was going to try to make it at least 10-1, and I think that came out to 9-1, and I was like, can't leave it there. And then the next best one I could come up with was Rose Namajunas, and that, like, ballooned it. And I did – if he's saying I was just throwing people in at the end, Rose was a throw-in. And I have to let you know that when the first four hit and Rose's fight was about to come up, I was like, man, maybe I shouldn't have added that one extra one.
Yeah.
Maybe I should have left her out of it and just taken the 9-1, looked at the cash out option. And then, as the good people at the Sports Gambling Podcast Network say, I just let it ride. So
you gotta let it ride.
Gotta let it ride, and that's what I did there. So glad I did.
That's pretty much the advice you get if you're in the Slack channel. People say, should I cash out or let it ride? They're gonna tell you let it ride. Some people will try to say they'll give you mathematical reasons why you should let it ride, but mostly it's the gens in there, and you gotta let it ride. That's just way that we roll around these parts. All right, well, you should break down the event, and then we're going to, like I said, we're going to get you some picks for some non-UFC fights coming up next week. But first, let me tell you about our friends at WynnBET. Ready to win money and boost your odds? WynnBET is now live in Arizona, Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, and Virginia. We're bringing the excitement of Wynn Las Vegas to online sports betting and casino play. Exclusive rewards right at your fingertips. Get in all your favorite teams, players, and sports from NFL, NBA, MLB, NHL, golf, MMA, WNBA, college football, and more. WynnBET has some brand new bonuses. New users can bet $1 to win $100 in any sport. Plus, you can get up to $1,500 as a free bet on WynnBET if you make a first deposit of $20 or more. Whatever your first wager is, WynnBET will match it 200%. For example, you bet $100, you get $200 free bet. Max wager match is $750, so they will match it up to $1,500. And we've been actually giving out some pretty good picks in here. We gave them, Chicago a few weeks ago. We gave them the Suns, and they covered that game against Houston. I think they covered it. No, wait a minute. Yeah, they did. They covered. And then do we have a pick for the bonus money this time, Dan?
So if we have to pick for the bonus money, so we can't take a Sunday game, right? Because by the time this gets to people's ears, nobody will be playing Sunday. So let me – hang on. I'm sure we have one because we have stuff all the time. Let me take a quick peek at the basketball lineups for Monday, which is usually a pretty light slate. Oh, yeah. Oh, no, they're playing the Nets. I don't like that at all, actually. Give me the Knicks plus 4.5 against the Sixers. The Knicks are, low-key kind of good. Are the Knicks good at basketball again?
Possibly. Very well, but yeah. No, okay, do that one. Use your bonus money. Take that. Take the Knicks Monday night. And doing a WynnBET because great promos, odds, and payouts are happening right now at WynnBET. From boosted parlays to live in-game odds in every major sport, we have what you need over at WynnBET. Ready to play? Sign up today to receive a special offer, risk-free $1,000 sports bet. Bet big, win bigger with WynnBET. Download the WynnBET app now or visit wynnbet.com. All right, we definitely won some bets last night. UFC 268, even if you didn't win bets, you probably didn't leave too unhappy after watching that event. It was quite a event fitting for Madison Square Gardens. It was, of course, Usman versus Covington 2. As I said, Madison Square Gardens in New York, 20,715 people there. Total gate was 9,800,000. I heard 9.9, but it looks like it may have been changed to 9.8 million, which is, I believe, the fourth highest gross ever for anything at Madison Square Gardens. So very impressive there. How many finishes? We had one stretch. We had 6 straight knockouts, which was wild. And then we had another knockout later on, and then the rest were decisions. But yeah, 6 straight knockouts was pretty crazy there.
And the fights that went the distance too were not boring. I mean, no. I think objectively there was maybe one fight on the card that I thought I watched and I was like, well, that wasn't all that much fun to watch. But apart from that, the whole thing was just – there was a fight on there that I would qualify as a fight of the year candidate that didn't win fight of the night. That's insane.
Yeah. Obviously, the boring fight is Gaethje Chandler. We'll go over that in a bit. But we'll start at the top. Kamaru Usman, as we predicted and as the bookies predicted, beat Colby Covington 48-47, 48-47, 49-46. I guess the score, I lean more play closer to the 49-46 or even 48-46 because maybe give him a 10-8 round because he knocked Covington down twice in the second round there and then was feeding him shots as the round ended also. But, yeah, he very clearly won it. I saw people I think I saw some media scores saying picking Covington to win, but I don't see how that happened. Most people seem to have it 2-2 going into the last round, which Usman clearly won. Very good fight once again. That's another fight possibly could have been fight night on an average UFC fight card. Usman is just too good, as we predicted. He's just better than Covington in every area, and Covington was more cautious last night than he was in their first fight, and as he is normally, which probably lost him the first couple rounds, was probably to his detriment. But who's to say? If he was more aggressive, maybe he would have gotten knocked out right away. But it went pretty much the way we expected it. Usman just seems to be getting better and better. I seem to see a lot of people hating on him for some reason after that performance, but that may just be degenerates that were going for the underdog Colby to come through, but no dominant performance. And did you hear, Dan, that he's the greatest welterweight of all time?
Kamaru Usman Colby? Think Colby is? I could totally see a post-fight interview with Colby Covington, who proceeded to get beat by the same guy pretty handedly twice.
Usman is the boss said Usman is. So
you know what?
Any chance he gets to bury GSP, he does. So
I know I'm up here with a Canadian co-host, but yes, I will say it is edging. It is getting to the point where, like, we at least have to talk about that, whether or not he is. Like, for me, you go prior to these last two fights, this one with Covington, the rematch with Covington, where he erased any doubt you might have had in that first performance. Because the first performance was good, but, like, Colby had a lot of good moments in the first one. Right. I would say even the rounds Colby won in this one, and I think he clearly won four, you could have possibly given him five. So I think that's the only way you could score this fight, right? Like maybe a 10-8 second. Colby won four, coin flip for five. He just didn't have any big moments. You know, no. Like his rounds were that, like, his pitter-patter jab landed a few more extra times in that round than Usman landed. So, yeah, like I think his ability to erase that doubt with the Colby rematch, his just absolute flatlining of Jorge Masvidal, who we all thought he'd beat, but just not that way. For me, those two fights undoubtedly pass Matt Hughes, if he hadn't already prior. Now he is head and shoulders ahead of Matt Hughes, and that puts him, like, dude, if not equal with GSP, at least right in his shadow.
He's improving, it seems, so.
Yeah, and if he's
this is what's
and
happening
there's
next.
So much and there's so much time too. You know what I mean? Like, like he could go out there and just make a fool out of Leon Edwards. He could beat the shit out of Vicente Luque. You know, Wonder Boy can make his way back up there, and he can beat the hell out of him. Like, with those three wins right there, as well as, like, who knows, like a super fight with whoever happens to be the middleweight champ, if it's not Izzy, because I know they said in order for those two to fight, they'd have to be making $100 million. But, like, he's got time to do it, too, and that's maybe the most impressive part of it.
Yep, very true. So what is next for him? You think they're going to wait and see what happens with Edwards and Masvidal?
Yeah, I think basically my breakdown of it is, if Masvidal goes out there and wins that fight, he's not getting a trilogy fight. That's really obvious to me. He's got no claim to it. Right now, Jorge Masvidal's job is to have the most fun fights he possibly can. So if Leon Edwards goes out and looks good in that fight, and I do stress looks good, it's his title fight. The problem is that he has a tendency to win and not look good. I could totally see them finding a way to get Vicente Luque in there first. Because he's looked really good as of late. It wouldn't surprise me if Gilbert Burns put on another really great performance and earned himself another shot before Edwards is. The right answer should be Edwards. I'm just not sure the right answer is going to be Edwards.
Yeah, Salikov has also won five straight, so he may not be ready yet.
Yeah,
but
he looked like shit in that last one. I almost lowered him in my official rankings after that last one. I was like, did he really belong in here?
Yeah, but going back to Edwards, he's another guy that they seem to have something against. So I think he's really going to have to go out there and grab this title shot. Obviously, he's going to have to because he's, what, one for what, how many years straight now? He hasn't lost.
Yeah, he's never going to lose again until you put him in there with Usman, because he's probably, I mean, he's probably the, if you're saying Usman's the champ and Colby's number one, I mean, he's probably 1A. He's probably just as good as Colby.
He's basically Tony Ferguson, what happened to him at lightweight all those years. So,
and it takes one loss to Masvidal coming up that could end it for him, you know, and that would be crazy.
And then Covington, there's a very clear hierarchy in welterweight. Usman's head and shoulders above everyone, and then there's a huge gap, obviously head and shoulders. And then you got Covington, and then there's another big gap, and then everyone else, basically, is how I see it.
Yeah, I agree. Just like, it seems like Leon Edwards, although you know what, Leon Edwards in Covington, I might put Gilbert Burns in there too, because just what he did to Wonderboy, and it might be like Usman, those three, and then fucking everybody else. Although we would be remiss if we had a conversation about welterweight and we didn't say the name Khamzat Chimaev. So
next title shot, watch it happen.
You know what, dude, that would be. If you could get him to step in and fight somebody like Vicente Luque and beat him, he 1,000% would pass Leon Edwards that title shot.
All he has to do, they do want to get him, sounds like they want to get him fighting before the end of the year. So if they could get him up against, I'd say any ranked person, especially if someone in the top 10, and he does what he's been doing everybody else, and I can very easily, they would, they basically do whatever they want, and they have in the past on occasion put
if you
off losses to title shots, but they could actually be justified if he actually beat another ranked person.
Yeah, and I would agree that if he went in there and beat, say, like the same way he just beat Li Jingliang, if he beat Michael Chiesa that way, it's his shot.
Sure.
It's his shot. Yep, I agree with you.
Yep, and then Covington and Masvidal, obviously, it seems like that would be the next money fight. Covington kind of going into the Masvidal category of guy you just try to make big fights and fun, exciting fights, but he's probably not going to get, at least while Usman's on top, he's not going to get another crack at the gold.
Yeah, I wouldn't give him another one. The weird thing for me, for him too, is that like he said in the post-fight interview that he thought he was one of the best two or three draws in the UFC. Which is just, I mean, it's got to be fundamentally incorrect.
Yeah,
I mean, if he's a top, especially after this loss, if he's a top 10 draw, I would be surprised.
Yeah, we'll have to see what this one sells, obviously. But yeah, I was shocked by the amount of cheers
for him. Because of him, though?
Yeah,
or
I know.
Sell because it's the most crazy stack card of all time.
Yeah, but the cheering for him. And New York's not a red state. What the hell was going on there, Dan? All the chants.
I mean, like, so I will say this. He does bring out his fans are loud, right? Like, there are loud fans for certain people. But I don't think, like, when you call yourself a draw, it's not just like you sold tickets to go to the stadium. That stadium would have sold out regardless of who was fighting on it, right? Like, that's what Madison Square Garden does. You sell out a fight card. And, like, it's the first fight card in New York in forever, so the fact that there were people in the stands cheering for him, to me, doesn't mean that he's a big draw. It's the pay-per-view numbers. And again, those pay-per-view numbers are only indicative of him so much as when you compare what was already on the card and whether or not you consider Kamaru Usman a draw. Because, at this point, you got to. He might be the best fighter in the world.
Yeah. No, I think in the pound-for-pound or the fighter performance rank as I do on my MMA site, MMA-manifesto.com, I think he is going to be very clearly number one after this one. So I don't see anyone challenging that for that at all. But still, I did not like seeing, not like hearing all this cheering for Covington. And like New York State's like right beside you and it's right beside me. Like, that's not good, Dan. We don't want those people near us. Right?
Is this the part
Colby
of the
Covington dance? Come on.
I mean, yeah. I mean, like, Colby Covington's, whether you think it's a shtick or what he actually is, it's like the most, this is why I don't think he's a good sell, right? Like, he's not palatable to the average fan. He's palatable to, like, the people who are crazy passionate about him. He is fun to watch fight, though. I'll give him that.
Yeah. No, yeah, I
really enjoy watching him fight, but you're right. Like, his fans, they're up there with, like, the, like, diehard Conor McGregor fans of being just, like, the most nauseating people to listen to.
Yeah. Well, I haven't read or listened to a Covington interview for, years now, so I really don't. I just watch him fight, and he's fun to watch fight, so I don't really care about the rest of the stuff, but still. We don't want those people by us. Come on, Dan.
Not since he was on Top Turtle MMA.
Oh, he was on your show, really? I don't remember. Yeah. Was that before the shtick or after? Was that when he was the wrestler?
I think it was the shtick emerging. Like, I think I got like a taste of it, and I
do
like,
remember
oh.
him now.
Yeah. I think I was like, oh, that was weird. Like, I like wasn't ready for it.
Yep, it hasn't stopped. Co-main event. Rose Namajunas won a split decision over Zhang Weili. We got this one right also. That's -300 we got for Usman. Then for Rose, we had her at -110. This one, I was, as you were, a little, well, at least you were with putting it into your parlay, a little uneasy about this pick. We weren't quite sure because it was basically a pick 'em on the board, and I was flopping back and forth. Going up to the fight, I'm glad I picked who I did pick, though. Split decision obviously shows how close it was. I think you could easily say that Zhang won the first three rounds. You could also easily say that she didn't, but I can see the score saying that she won that fight. But I think the right person won, mostly because we bet on her, but I can definitely see the argument that Zhang won the first three rounds and then Rose turned it on in the championship rounds.
I can see that. I gave Rose the second.
I think she probably got one of the.
Yeah, for me, it was Rose 2, 4, and 5. I thought it was pretty obviously that way too. But people seemed to after the first three rounds be like Rose doesn't want anything, and I was like, hasn't she though? Like, and then one judge gave her both 2 and 3, which I thought was not the right call. I like did score the fight for her, but like for me it was 48-47 one way or the other. So to give anybody a 49-46 would sounded crazy, but yeah, I mean, like, she looked like Rose Namajunas looked. I like that Weili Zhang, I like the way she took that loss, because like a lot of people who first of all said the first fight was stopped too early and was like, you know, indignant about it. Then they lose a split decision. It's pretty crazy to see them just like gracefully take it and walk away. But, you know, props to her for doing that. Exciting fight to watch. I'm not sure there's too much to break down there. It kind of went exactly like we thought it would. Razor close, and the technical striking of Rose Namajunas took over just a little bit more.
Yep, exactly. Well, we can talk about who's next. Speaking of fighters who the UFC have an axe to grind against, it sounds like Carlos Barza, they have an axe to grind against. Dana White says she's not next because she's waiting around for a title fight, and that's not how you do it. Well, she fought in May, so I don't really think she's waiting around too much. It's what, half a year.
In other words, that means she declined to fight somebody on a main event when they needed a main event.
Yeah.
Which it sucks as a reason to not put her in that title fight. I will say this, though. While I am really interested in Rose Namajunas versus Carla Esparza, which I think it's a no-brainer should be next, I hope that the UFC is just playing hardball with her and get her to sign something or to scare her into taking more fights later. And so like, I hope it happens. That being said, if it doesn't happen, Rose Namajunas versus Marina Rodriguez would be so much fun.
Who's that?
Marina Rodriguez.
Who's Marina Rodriguez? I never heard of her. Is she a new
fighter? Oh, my God. You're going to make me say Marina Rodriguez.
Oh, yeah. She's very good. 5-1 in the UFC. But here's the thing.
You played that fucking so well.
Carla Esparza beat her. Carla Esparza also beat Rose Namajunas. So, like, it's like she's obviously the pick here. If there's any if it's a just sport, which it isn't really, it's they can do whatever they want. But yeah, she's Carla Esparza is the obvious pick, and she's not sitting on her laurels. Like I said, she fought in May and she's won five straight fights, and she beat the champ, and she beat the other person that could be in the running for a title fight. So yeah, just make the fight, right?
Yeah, I'm on your side with this one, but I will say, I enjoy watching Marina Rodriguez fight. Hadhigan.
No,
sorry.
Oh, Hadhigan. Right. Okay. Yeah. Yep. Definitely. Definitely. No, come on, Dan. For the next fight, come on. I told you about this, and like, I don't know why you go out in these limbs. Who was it a few weeks ago?
I went to bat for Volkan Ozdemir, but yeah, I will say then, this.
And now Frankie Edgar.
Frankie looked better than Volkan Ozdemir, mostly because he tried to win the fight and did win a round.
Yeah, that's not saying much, though. KO, front kick to the face, and Frankie Edgar's one of the only guys who's tough enough who would dispute an actual KO, like a clean KO loss. He's like bounces up right away and disputes it. Most people would be laid out forever. This wasn't a TKO. This was he actually got knocked out and then was angry that the fight got stopped. But another brutal knockout for Frankie Edgar. It's what, two in a row and like three out of four or something like that. And he's 40 years old and he's going for a title shot though, Dan. He's in there for the bantamweight title still.
Have you seen the freeze frame?
Yes, I have.
Oh, my God. For the ladies and gentlemen listening to this podcast who have not seen the freeze frame of Frankie Edgar being kicked in the face, do yourself a favor. Go look it up.
Go to our Slack channel. It's on there. Superfan Jong put it on the fight channel. My man, Jong.
Happy birthday. That being said, no, I did think Frankie looked good. I thought going into that third round, he had a real chance to win this fight. He just needed to get his wrestling going in the third round, and he did a little bit in the beginning of the third round. Leading into that front kick, which happened with, only a minute and 10 seconds left on the clock, he was still in that fight. So, when you have an underdog who's that close to winning that fight, I don't hate that beat. It's one of those ones where, the favorite was the right answer, but usually we see a lot more dogs than we saw this weekend win. So I don't mind being on one that was pretty close.
Yeah, not anymore. The dogs have been dying over the past couple months.
And it was crazy because to kick off the year, remember we were talking about there was like 60% dogs who would hit for the first 3 weeks or something, and it is just, it is trying to cancel that out quick.
No kidding. So I have Vera minus 180, the right pick. So I got that one right. Frankie Edgar needs to retire. If you ask me, the thing that kept him going for so many years was his chin and how he could never be finished. But at three out of four fights, he's been stopped. He's been clean knocked out in the past two. Pretty bad in the one earlier this year. Very bad, the one earlier this year. This one should have been bad, but somehow he recovered very quickly on it. But, it's not going to improve for him. All you have to do is study the careers of any fighter. You don't get Glover Teixeira is the rarity here, and he hasn't been knocked out as bad as Frankie has been most recently. Plus, all the talk heading in that he still thinks he's a title contender, they shouldn't be letting him fight anymore.
Yeah, well, in that you basically outlined my multi-step process for asking for a fighter to retire, because I'm not one of those people who's they need to hang it up. But my caveats to saying they don't need to hang it up is usually, first of all, are they being knocked out in a way that their brain is going to turn into mashed potatoes? And boom, Frankie checks that box, right? The Chuck Liddell box, if you want to call it that, right? Yes. Chuck Liddell getting knocked out by Rich Franklin was oof, Chuck, dude.
Chris Weidman.
And then the other one, the other one is not only is your brain getting turned into mashed potatoes, but also what are your career aspirations at this?
Right.
Do they align in a realistic way? And if both you're getting knocked silly and your career aspirations do not line up in a meaningful, smart way, then those are two telltale signs that you need to get out of there. You take somebody like Sam Alvey and people are he needs to retire. He's lost a bunch in a row or they need to fight. He's not going out there and getting starched.
And he's fighting a good level of competition. He's not fighting younger, top of the division guys.
He's fighting a good level of competition. He's not going out there after each loss and being I won that fight by a mile. Where's my title shot? He's just out there. He's collecting his paycheck. He's putting fun-ass fights on usually fun-ass fights on. And then, he knows where he's at. Frankie doesn't know where he's at, and maybe it's because he got kneed in the head with a knee that was going 7,000 miles an hour by Corey Sandhagen.
Yeah, well, your boyfriend Andrei Arlovski is the perfect example. He's right. Not talk about title shots, and he's actually changed the way he fights so he doesn't get destroyed, knocked
exactly.
out.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's the key. But anyhow, can't wait to see your next fight, Frankie Edgar, because I'm sure he's not going anywhere, and I'm sure they're going to keep giving him fights. So that's the way it goes in the sport. So I will continue to fade you, and good luck to you. Godspeed. Next fight, Dan got wrong also. Good fight, though. Shane Burgos beat Billy Quarantillo, 29-28, 29-28, 29-28. On a normal night, this would have been in the running for fight of the night. But
it's in the running for fight of the year now.
Very good fight. Quarantillo, it basically went the way we could have envisioned it going, except you were hoping Billy Q would have his hand raised. But, you know, he was a dog, and he was in the fight the whole time. But Burgos back to form and got himself got his hand raised for the first time in, like, 2 years.
Billy Q looked good boxing, too. I know he was doing work with Antonio Tarver leading into this fight. That's obviously helped him, because I really saw this as like a striker-grappler matchup where I didn't have a lot of faith in his hands. And his hands look good. So while it sucks to see him lose, and especially when you had him picked, good on Burgos. It's good to see him back in the win column. And damn, yeah, like, if that fight didn't precede the fight we're about to, come after the fight we're about to talk about here, my goodness, would we still be talking about Burgos Quarantillo for days afterwards? But instead, we're going to switch gears real quick and talk about Justin Gaethje, Michael Chandler.
Justin Gaethje, Michael Chandler, as expected, it was a war. 29-28, 29-28, 30-27 for Justin Gaethje. We had him pegged to win this one. It pretty much was what we expected, slugfest, and we said Gaethje, we have more faith in him being able to hold up and withstand the onslaught, which he did, but that's taking nothing away from Michael Chandler, who also was more than tough enough for the fight. Begging Gaethje to hit him even more. It was almost like a hockey team pulling the goalie, even though they're losing 10-0, saying, go ahead, score some more goals. Because he was egging Gaethje on, and Gaethje was obliging and lighting him up. But yeah, heck of a fight. Gaethje should be getting the next title fight after this. And Chandler's basically cemented himself as a action fighter fan favorite, and he's punched his ticket for a bunch of fun fights going forward, I'm sure. He's properly recovered, obviously. I will say...
It was a really weird thing for him to, like, drop his hands and, like, encourage action, right? Because, first of all, people do that in fights where they're losing to try to draw somebody into a firefight, right? Like, I saw – you might remember Chris Leben did that fighting Michael Bisping. Michael Bisping fought, like, a crazy point fight and didn't engage, and Leben just put his hands down and let Bisping punch him in the face. So you do that to goad them into a firefight. When you feel like they don't have the power to knock you out, and you know it's a last-ditch effort to try to get them into that firefight, that was so fucking dumb on Chandler's point. Because, look, first of all, he wants to fight you in a firefight. He's not backing away from it. He's very obvious that he is just going to do that anyway. You don't need to goad him into it. He's already doing it. And number two is, he can knock you out, dude. He's proven multiple times in this one fight. He, like, nearly knocked Chandler out, like, four times in that fight. Never mind, like, another. So, like, what are you doing dropping your hands other than, like, was he trying to steal judges' scorecards by getting punched in the head more? Whatever he was doing, it was dumb as hell. But, yeah, like, to your – maybe your more – salient point here, like, Gaethje is going to get the next title shot. Whether or not, you know, the slew of challengers like Islam Makhachev or Benil Dariush or whoever you were about at 155, all of them are getting passed up for Justin Gaethje. It's Gaethje next.
Yep. And it doesn't really matter who wins the next title fight, because him versus either man would be fire emoji, bomb emoji.
Yeah, it's going to be good.
Yeah, Gaethje against anyone is, basically.
Yeah, I'd watch Gaethje fight a paper bag on pay-per-view at this point. Like, he's that good.
And I would love to see Chandler destroy Conor McGregor next, but I'm sure that won't happen. But
no, there's no way.
That would be great. That would be great, because he would eat him eat him for lunch. So who would you like to see? Who realistically would you like to see Chandler fight next? Hopefully not for a while, though, because, like I said.
Maybe they can get him back for Black History Month.
Oh, God, remember that? That was fantastic. February, he should be all right. No, maybe he – I don't know. If February, if he's taking quite a beating. Yeah. I don't know.
Maybe they can get him back for the Black History Month special. Yeah,
maybe. Dude, good old UFC.
You have all of those, like famous, like –
yep.
High-profile black fighters, and you decide that you're going to use Black History Month to celebrate Michael Chandler. It's so silly. Apart from that fun joke there about Michael Chandler and Black History Month, I, to be honest with you, and I know that this fight doesn't make much sense from a trajectory standpoint, I really think him versus Islam Makhachev is like the test Makhachev needs. Because Chandler's wrestling defense is good. He showed, even though he got reversed in his takedown attempt against Gaethje, like, he didn't let Gaethje stay on top of him for more than, like, half a second. He's shown in the past he's got good submission defense. Like, I think he is what Islam Makhachev needs. Makhachev is obviously not what he needs at this point. He needs Dan Hooker. He needs, somebody of that tier. Gregor Gillespie. He needs that, those guys.
Ferguson.
Tony Ferguson's fallen into my Frankie Edgar span at this point.
Oh, yeah, but he's not going anywhere.
I also think Chandler's kind of head and shoulders ahead of Tony Ferg right now. So,
oh, yeah, obviously. Yeah,
like, whereas I think he could fight, some of the more competitive guys towards the bottom, the Brad Riddells and of the world and stuff like that, too. Somebody like that to get him back on the right track is probably the best answer.
Because Makhachev, it seems like Dariush is going to be, or that's what a lot of people are saying, is going to be the fight for him.
I'm calling that one now. I said originally that Makhachev could jump to a title fight depending on what happened in this one right here. Like, if it was uncharacteristically dull, or if Chandler won, and then also so did Charles Oliveira. You're not going to rebook that one. Makhachev is probably going to fight either Beneil Dariush or whoever loses the title fight. But I wouldn't mind him fighting Chandler either.
No. Chandler's basically one of those guys where we wouldn't mind watching him fight anyone at this point. So he's, like I said, he's 35 though. And he's been taking a beating. So who knows how much longer we're going to have him. So hopefully they can book him some fun fights, before his time is run out. That rightfully won fight of the night, $50,000 to both those guys. And then the fight before, Marlon Vera got one of the performance of the night bonuses. They gave out four of those instead of two this week. All right, we'll run through the prelims fairly quick because we have, like I said, we do have some betting advice for you coming up. But first, let me tell you about Prop Swap. We're brought to you by Prop Swap, America's marketplace to buy and sell sports bets. The MLB playoffs, why does it still say they're in full swing? Dan, your Atlanta Braves took care of the MLB playoffs.
They took care of it.
They are the champs. Well, all season long, Prop Swappers were making and finding the best odds in the country because they were buying directly from other bettors like you and me. So hopefully some people got some Atlanta Braves future tickets on there because they would have cashed in big. And if you are on Prop Swap, you can cash in big if you use promo code SGP. When you first deposit, Prop Swap will double it up to $500. Double the cash means double the odds. If you love sports betting, you need to be using PropSwap. Every ticket purchased on PropSwap can be resold at any time, so your bet doesn't need to win in order to make money. It just needs to improve. So you don't need to win. You just need to improve, like the stock market. Thousands of bettors across the country are shopping for tickets on PropSwap every day. Get started today by going to PropSwap.com or download the PropSwap app. PropSwap is where America buys and sells sports bets. Like I'm saying, we should swing through the prelims quickly, but like I said, there's so many knockouts and stuff. It's hard to fly through everything because it was a very exciting night. Alex Pereira, flying knee and punches TKO over Andreas Michailidis. Pretty much what we both had, Pereira at -260. I would say it pretty much went the way we predicted it. Pereira definitely needs work on his takedown defense, but once he got himself out of the grappling and clinch and takedown situations, he unleashed on Michailidis, and obviously looking forward to seeing more of Alex Pereira.
Yeah, and I think you nailed it. Just, he is a guy who I will not be super sold on if he comes in at -300 or -400 for his next fight. if the guy he's fighting can wrestle. So, yeah, I'm going to have an eye on that.
And the next fight, oh, this was not a good night for New York City area fighters. Bobby Green does not finish fights, Dan. Once I remember this last time we broke down his fight. I can't remember the last time he finished a fight. It's been, I want to say decades, maybe decades since he's finished a fight. But he TKO'd Ally Quinta last night. What you were afraid of picking Al was that he had 1 foot out of fighting, but maybe he has 2 feet out of fighting because he did not look good last night. He got lit up by Bobby Green, precision striking. And Bobby Green, like I said, he's got 10 knockouts out of his 28 wins, but they are a long time coming. I'm checking right now his last knockout. I'm going, wait, a last knockout was a body kick knockout to James Krause in November of 2013. And his last actual like knockout was, I'm still scrolling here, TKO punches Ricky Laguerre, King of the Cage, 2010. So it was a decade. But yeah, he got a knockout last night and performance of the night. He looks spectacular, and Ally Quinta, probably the last we've seen him.
I hope so, because when we broke
lost
this,
your money, damn it.
Well, and when we broke this one down ahead of time, I said, look, I'm not thrilled about betting on him, but if he comes in looking anything like the old Ally Quinta, he should have no problem here, and he should look good. In the underdog money, he'll look super smart. He looks slow. He looked like he didn't want to be there. He looked like he didn't know how to time anything. It was a bad Ally Quinta. So if he is going to stick around, he needs to be in there more consistently. Like, this every 2 year shit is not going to work for him.
Yeah. Oh, and I was wrong, actually, Dan. You were only 9-5, so I gave you an extra win. I just realized you have another loss coming up, too. So sorry, son.
Is it this next one that I said I was always going to gonna tail this next guy?
Well, we got screwed by Phil Haas. Phil Haas, -350 lock for Dan. I didn't mind losing this one because after hearing Chris Curtis on the Top Turtle MMA podcast, cheap plug for Dan. Delightful guy, and it's good to see him finally make it to the UFC, and he won via knockout first round and got himself – he didn't give himself a bonus for that? What? That's ridiculous.
It's sad, too, because, like, he deserves – he's not even in this weight class. Like, he's a welterweight.
He didn't look too small, really. He looked similar to Haas.
He looks like a big-ass welterweight.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the thing, and Haas isn't small by any means.
No, he's a monster.
Yeah.
Good on him for getting that win. You mentioned he sounds like a nice guy on the show. Dude, he is such a nice guy. Like, he's just a great dude, and it's like it's one of those moments in MMA where a really good thing happened to a really great guy who nearly retired two or three times, and you couldn't be happier for Chris Curtis. I hope he gets a couple more fun wins and fun fights coming up.
Yeah, hopefully, like I said, I was thinking hopefully he can get a couple more fights and maybe get himself into a second contract and start making some decent money. Because, like I said, how many fights did he have in his belt, actually?
That was
one of those, other than Frankie
fight.
Edgar.
That was his 35th fight.
Yeah.
His UFC debut.
Other than Frankie Edgar, he probably was like the most, maybe Bobby Green had more. Yeah, Bobby Green, no.
But he has,
yeah, Bobby
but he
Green,
has more
Bobby
fights
Green has 40
than,
or so. Yeah.
He has more fights than Jean Valente. He has more fights than Chris Barnett, who also took, you know, like a million years to get to the UFC.
Yeah,
you know,
the only people with more experience last night was Edgar and Bobby Green. So
yeah, he has more. He's fought more than Justin freaking Gaethje, who used to fight every weekend for World Series of Fighting.
Yeah. So, yeah, you like to see stuff like that come through. So, like I said, I didn't mind. There's two reasons. I'd mind because, you know, actually three reasons. Good story, nice guy, and it was Dan's lock. So it's always nice when Dan loses his lock picks, isn't it, everyone? Hopefully you weren't tailing it. So Dan's 16-14 on his locks now, down almost $500. Come on. Locks are supposed to win. I keep explaining this to you every week, but no.
Parlays and props win.
That's true. Parlays is – that's basically what – That's the thing. You're all about three-pointers and slam dunks, Dan. You're all about the big highlight reel stuff because that's what's getting you adulation on the internet and on the message boards and stuff. So, hey, I get it. Parlays are what Dan's all about. And flashy knockout props. If you had some knockout props in the prelims, you would have won a bunch. And then the opener of the main prelims, Nestorin Imavov, as we predicted, TKO elbows knockout over Edmund Shahbazyan. Kind of felt like watching an execution that it went on for a long time because Shahbazyan's tough as nails, but we got Imovov for a very nice -125 number. Looking forward to seeing more of him, and yeah, I don't know what to think of Shahbazyan now. He's had a tough run, but he's also had tough competition, three fights in a row. Time for a step back at the very least.
It was really tough to hear. Well, this was a step back, really. You know, like in the first place.
Bad and then, matchup, though.
Yeah, it also irked me a little bit that DC on the broadcast was talking about Shahbazyan coming to an American Kickboxing Academy to work on his wrestling, and like that's what you looked like after working at your wrestling for a while at AKA.
I don't think he needs to work. I don't think the wrestling is the issue with him either, but yes, go ahead.
I mean, like some of it is though. Like Imovov took him down pretty freaking easily. And like and that
did,
was
he finished on the ground too. So yeah.
Yeah. And like he does, yeah, he doesn't seem to like know how to get up when he's down. He seems clueless off his back, which I mean, like, I guess that's wrestling. I guess there's some jujitsu in there, but like, yeah, his defensive grappling needs some work. And yeah, a big step back is in order for him now. And I'm super excited to see Imovov. That dude should be ranked damn near the top 10 when those come out. I want to see him against the you know, like a guy in the division.
Yeah, middleweight's not exactly the most stacked, talent-rich division too. So you very quickly can rise up the ranks there. So yeah, looking forward to seeing more of that. So then early prelims. Ian Garry, it took him a little bit to get going against Jordan Williams, but he got it going with 1 second left in the first round by knockout via punches over Jordan Williams. We had Garry at -375, and he was my lock. So put another, 26.67 into the win column there. So I'm 19-10 in my locks. I'm still down about $20. So I'm almost scratching back to even. But yeah, maybe it was some of the UFC jitters for Garry. It took him a little ways to go, and plus he's fighting a guy who was basically fighting for his UFC career, having lost his first two fights. But he did get it going eventually, and got himself a knockout.
Yeah, I think it's a little jitters. I think it was a little of the old. I'm used to tooling on everybody, and like even Jordan Williams is a step up from the guys he was fighting in Cage Warriors. So yeah. I think a little cage jitters and a little bit like, oh shit, like I have to pay attention to what I'm doing. But yeah, like he's going to be exciting. I'll be excited to see him again.
Yeah, he's young and barely fought really. Well, that was fight number
eight, I believe.
Yeah, that's the thing. So yeah. And probably the end of, I know you like Jordan Williams, but probably the end of Jordan Williams in the UFC, at least for now, you would say.
Yeah, he's going to need to win some fights to come back.
Yep. And then what can we say about Chris Barnett? We pretty much talked about
What can't we say about Chris Barnett?
What can't you say? He, Gian Vellante, still fat and sloppy. That hasn't changed.
Fatter, actually. He was 17.
Oh, yeah, he was. Yes. Oh, my God. Yeah, Barnett. TKO, spinning wheel kick and punches, and then the amazing celebration after the fact. So,
good walkout, too. Let's give him a good walkout.
He rightfully got himself 50 Gs, as did Bobby Green earlier on, and Alex Pereira. I forgot to mention those. They were the other winners. It was tough to get yourself a bonus because there was so much action last night. But, yeah, Chris Barnett, does he have a real future in this division? Or
he's just going to be a
fun guy, right?
He's so
a big
fun.
Country type fun guy.
Yeah, he's like the reincarnation of Big Country, only he's like way better on the mic and like got a lot of personality, whereas Big Country didn't and immediately was hated by Dana White. I think Barnett will be beloved by everybody. Like I think he's one of those guys like Sam Elvey, who even if he went out there and lost six in a row, the UFC might keep him. Seems like a company guy, just real happy to be there now. And now he's throwing spinning wheel kick KOs, which is fucking awesome.
Yeah. And Gian Vellante, retirement match, as they say on Sean Sheehan says on the top on the Severe MMA podcast. Can't wait to see his next fight in the cage.
after such thing. Retires. Yeah.
Hopefully it's not in the UFC though. But yeah. Fun fight, -106. We got Barnett far too, and Dan also had a juicy knockout prop on him. So And he's still, yet he's still doing this podcast. He's still slumming it with us people with less money than him. So there you go. Justin Jacoby, this was a late replacement, stepped in, -350. Basically, piece apart John Allen on the feet. And you don't really want to get in a kickboxing battle with Justin Jacoby, but that's what the
John Allen is. John Allen seemed to want to, though.
Yeah, for some reason,
he didn't want to shoot a takedown.
No. 29-28, 29-28, 30-27 for Jacoby. The night kind of started off slow, but we had three straight decisions. And then
but Jacoby's was a fun fight, though. Yeah. Like that was, you know, really fun to watch. And one of the last two that we're going to talk about here was fun to watch as well.
Plus, Jacoby, this is a very nice. He's another one of those nice stories. Got cut from the UFC after going 0-2. That was a long time ago, too, wasn't it? That was like
10 years ago.
Yeah, there you go.
A decade ago, dude. Like,
and now second stint, 4-0-1 in the UFC. So,
and he said that in the backstage interviews. He said on Sunday, he was elk hunting in a place that had like no service, and he was drinking a beer around the campfire, and his buddy got a phone call because his buddy had a little bit of service, and it was his wife being like, hey, you got a fight offer. Just trying to reach him at this in fight week.
yes.
And like he took it anyway, like a crazy person, but it's a damn good thing he did. Cause I love watching Justin Jacoby fight. Super nice guy. Like you said, good story. And now undefeated in 5 fights in the UFC.
Yep, moving on up. In light heavyweight, like just like middleweight, not super deep, talent-rich division. So you can make some noise if you keep putting some Ws on the board. Melsik Baghdasaryan, -325. We had him. And he beat Bruno Souza, who came in overweight by, 2.4 pounds overweight, technically. 29-28, 29-28, 29-28. You have much to say about this one?
No.
Or anything to say about this one?
It was not a fun fight.
Nope. But we won it.
The only not fun fight, although I do love Melsik Baghdasaryan, it's just a bad style matchup, I think, ultimately.
Yeah. And then the opener, I shouldn't have trailed Dan here. I blame him for getting this one wrong. CJ Vergara, not only lost, he also came in fat. He was... technically 1.4 pounds overweight because they're given a weight, an extra pound allowance. So 29-28, 29-28, 29-28 loss to Ode Osborne, who all of a sudden what we were saying the issue with him is he never would use his length properly. All of a sudden he decided last night he was going to start using his length properly.
He didn't in the third round. Sucked at using his length in the third round. Nah, he didn't just lose. He almost got finished in the third round. So another one of those fights like the Frankie Edgar one, where I still do feel good. He like right up until the last moment, it felt like Vergara was in this fight. And granted, when they went to the judges, you were like, he lost 1-2. Your biggest hope was that he got a 10-8 third because it wasn't a 10-8 third, but it was you were hoping two judges could have botched it and gotten you a draw. But I don't think a terrible pick to go underdog there.
No, so. Yeah, so we got that one wrong because Osborne actually fought differently than we expected. We got, Chris Curtis and Phil Haas wrong because we always get Phil Haas wrong, I think.
Yeah.
It's all
Phil Haas goes right in my my Michael Johnson bucket where I'm just never going to get his fights right.
Yeah, and that's all I got wrong. Dan got Iaquinta wrong just because he was hoping that
there was
still some fight left in him, and there was not. He got Quarantillo wrong. He didn't really get it wrong. He that fight pretty much went the way you expected. He just didn't get his hand raised. Mm-hmm. And Edgar, you forgot that he was 40 and gets knocked out now.
Yeah. He did look good wrestling, though, right?
Yeah. Well, imagine that, eh? Maybe he should drop a weight class again. Flyweight Frankie. That's going to be the next thing.
Flyweight Frankie.
That's going to be the next. I'm sure he could. He was small. He was a smaller man in the cage.
Well, it's easy to be smaller than Marlon Vera, who's a monster at that weight class.
Yeah, and he had some attitude last night, too.
He flipped him off. I forgot. Yeah. We didn't even talk about him flipping off
Frankie Edgar. Yeah.
So who flips off Frankie Edgar?
Yeah. Yeah, he said they were fighting for money, so it was just part of playing head games, he claims,
sure.
I think.
Sure, whatever.
Want. anyhow, fun night overall of fights. I went 12-2. Dan was 9-5. I gave him credit for an extra win, but I've taken it away now, Dan. Boo.
I'll
but
survive.
Still, you came close to winning money, and you hit a plus 1300 parlay, which will be your new crutch when things go wrong in the future.
That'll be my new Gerald Meerschaert III or my Montserrat Ruiz.
It will be. And then when we're back on Wednesday, we will break down UFC Fight Night Holloway versus, is it Rodriguez? Let me think.
He's Yair, he's Mexican, though, he's Mexican. So probably not.
That's right. Yeah, Yair Rodriguez is true. I want to call everyone Rodriguez now. So rest of the card kind of, it's all right. Nothing.
There's a couple I really like.
Yeah. We lost Ovince St. Peru today. He was supposed to fight against Felipe Lins, but he's backed out. So anyhow,
was that another heavyweight one for him?
It would have been if he fought. Yeah, no, they said light heavyweight. So Lins must have been dropping down.
Lins is dropping. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Anyhow, we'll break that down with you with the winning picks on Wednesday. We do have some winning picks for you coming up very, very shortly for a couple non UFC events, because we have lost the contender series for the season is over. So Dan's going to have to find magic in other realms, which I'm sure we will. But first, Prize Picks. Have you heard about Prize Picks? Prize Picks is daily fantasy made easy. I love this, and I know you will too. Prize Picks has the best NBA DFS prop game on the market. Prize Picks offers more NBA props than any other DFS prop operator and offers all the superstar players as well as bench players, only recording a handful of minutes each game. PrizePicks offers any props you can think of, from yardage to touchdowns, even interceptions thrown. All of your users that deposit and use promo code SGP, so all you users, make sure you use promo code SGP, you'll receive 100% instant deposit match up to $100. So once again, SGP is the code you want to use. What you do when you're in there, you pick 2 to 5 players, and then you pick an over-under on their projections, and you can win up to 10 times on any entry. And that's just, and it's just basically just you versus the projected numbers. So like I said before, when we were picking baseball ones, it was under usually 1.5 hits plus walks. You pick whether a player is going to get over 1.5 hits plus walks. You pick over and under, get enough of those right, you can win 10 times your money. Simple as that. But now we have it for other sports, obviously, NBA, NFL, all that type of stuff. So price mix, and plus you can mix all those sports. So you can take it over on LeBron combined with an under on Mahomes on the very same entry. Use their award-winning app on both the App Store and Google Play. Entries can be made in 60 seconds or less. It's that easy. PrizePicks is safe and offers fast withdrawals. So don't hesitate. Check out PrizePicks.com and use promo code SGP. Get your 100% instant deposit match up to $100. Or go to your App Store and download the app today. PrizePicks is daily fantasy made easy. And if you're in the App Store and you haven't already, get our app, SGPN app. We're now live in the App Store and Google Play. We give you easy access to all our picks and podcasts. And if you throw up an app review, that would be much appreciated. All right. We wanted to make sure we got you hardcore degens some actual fights to bet on this week. Not just on this episode, I mean, not just telling you how great we did with our picks at UFC. So we have a couple events coming up on Friday that we thought we would give you some picks on. And then next episode, we will give you the picks for the Saturday UFC. So let's start with Friday. First one, Bellator 271, Cyborg versus Kavanaugh. It is going down, like I said, Friday from Hollywood, Florida at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino. And it is on... Prelims are on YouTube or Pluto TV at 7 p.m. Eastern. Main card, Showtime, 10 p.m. Eastern. And the main event is for the Women's Featherweight Championship, Chris Cyborg versus Sinead Kavanaugh. I will give you a quick breakdown of the fight. Dan's breakdown basically was Cyborg via murder. I'm not sure what are the odds on that, Cyborg via murder.
I think probably like every other Cyborg odd is like negative 2,500.
Yeah, probably. If you haven't heard of her, that would be – actually, I'll tell you the challenger first. Sinead Kavanaugh, a Irish fighter. Her nickname is KO. She's 7-4 with 4 knockouts, 4-4 in Bellator. She's won 2 straight fights, but she's not fought in over a year, October of 2020. And the champion, Chris Justino, but she's known as Chris Cyborg, 24-2 with 1 no contest, 19 knockouts, 1 submission. 3-0 in Bellator, all the fights via finish. She's won 4 straight fights. She was in the UFC before, where she went 5-1, only lost to Amanda Nunes. She was also 5-0 in Invicta, also 4-0 with one no contest in Strikeforce, and she was the champion in all of those promotions I named. She also was 2-1 as a pro kickboxer. She's a grappling champ. She's 3 inches taller, has 3 inches of reach. Obviously, Cyborg is going to win this fight and probably via knockout, correct?
Yeah, and we don't even need to dig too much into it. It's not worth betting. It's boring as hell. Sinead Kavanaugh is 3-4 in her last 7 fights. I don't know what they're doing here. I guess maybe she's more marketable than any other option, or they're out of options. But it's just pass on betting this, because most likely you're going to need a big pile of cash to win nickels, and it's not worth it.
Yep. We don't have. You want to explain why we don't have odds for this or for the LFA event we're going to be breaking down after this one?
So I think for the LFA one, there's usually just not enough early interest in it. So I won't knock LFA too much for it. But, you had emailed me and asked why we don't have Bellator odds yet. And Bellator's matchmaking is notoriously really terrible. You see tons of, -1,000 and -2,000 favorites. And a lot of times sportsbooks don't like to give you too much early betting time for that, because it leaves a lot of room for them to take a hit on bad lines. Because sometimes they'll start a line and be like, oh, this guy's clearly going to win, and leave him at -800, and the money still pours in on him, and he's -2,500. And they just leave themselves really liable to a couple of early bets in that way. So I think a lot of the sports books have kind of smartened up and not opened up their Bellator lines until much later. So when we do give you these picks on our next 3 fights, I'll give you ranges that you should keep an eye out for that I think might be ones that you want to bet.
You would think they would want to open this as soon as possible to get maybe take a hit on a few of the early smart money coming in, but then at least, you think they would at least be able to get a grasp on what a good line is for it.
Yeah, but for UFC, it's easy because you have a lot of fighters who have spent a lot of time in the UFC. But
yeah,
like,
that's true.
You know, we're going to talk about, Aaron Pico versus Justin Gonzalez in a second. Mm-hmm. And the problem with this fight is that Justin Gonzalez has one fight in Bellator so far, and he's fighting one of Bellator's hottest commodities.
Yeah.
So it's hard to think do people have any faith in him? Is his 12-0 record actually good at 12-0? There's so many things to ask about it.
That's true. All right, let's move to the co-main event first. Heavyweight Linton Vassell versus Tyrell Fortune. Vassell's nickname is The Swarm. He is 20-8 with 1 no contest, 8 knockouts, 8 submissions. He's been knocked out himself 4 times. He's 9-5 in Bellator. He used to be light heavyweight, I believe, right?
He did, in fact.
Yeah. Most of his career has been light heavyweight, actually, except for the last few. He's won 2 straight fights, both via TKO. However, there are his only 2 wins over his last 5. He lost 3 straight before that. He, like I said, former light heavyweight. He's the UC MMA champ. He was the OMMAC champ. I'm not going to ask you what either of those are, because you don't know either of those, correct?
Not off the top of my head.
He's 2 inches taller, 5 inches of reach over Fortune. Fortune, 11-1 with 1 no contest, 7 knockouts, 1 submission. He's been knocked out once himself. He's won 3 straight fights, 2 straight via TKO. All of his fights have been in Bellator, so he's had nothing but high-level competition, but, it's Bellator, so who's to say? 7 years younger. So if you want to give us a quick breakdown, who you think the pick is and what a range would be good to bet this person in.
So I think it's going to be Fortune as a huge favorite here. You mentioned he's an actual heavyweight. Vassell wasn't usually. You also look at the type of people who beat Vassell all the time, and it's wrestlers. Like King Mo's got a win over him and people like that. So for me, Tyrell Fortune, obvious pick here. He's a really great wrestler. He's going to get it done here. I would say he's probably going to open in the -400 range. So you're going to want to jump on him as quick as possible if you do want him. But I'm way more interested in here is one of the finish props. Him by KO here is probably the way to go. But also, he does have a couple of submission finishes. Granted, one of the submission finishes was he punched Matt Mitrione until he quit, and that was a submission technically. But I like him by KO here probably, and when you get that prop, it's probably – that one's probably worth playing down in the, you know, close to even money kind of number.
All right, there you go. Moving on to featherweights, the aforementioned Aaron Pico versus Justin Gonzalez. Pico, 8-3, 6 knockouts, 2 submissions, so everything is a finish for him. He's been knocked out himself twice, so 2 of his 3 losses have come via knockout. All of his fights have been in Bellator. He's won 4 straight fights, all via finish, obviously, because all he does is finish fights. He also was a championship wrestler, a championship boxer, a championship pancration fighter. He's fighting J-Train, Justin Gonzalez, 12-0, 4 knockouts, 1 submission, 1-0 in Bellator, 1-0 on the Dana White Contender Series, and in former LFA champion. So is Gonzalez a legit prospect here or a legit challenge for Pico?
Yeah, he's really legit, and it's interesting because it's been a while since they've given Pico a real step up, right? Because, you know, Pico in his early career, you know, he fought good people. Like, he lost to an 8-2 guy in his debut. And then they pumped the brakes a little bit by having him fight Justin Lynch and Shane Crutchin. I guess Shane Crutchin's kind of good, but he's like a 10th planet-y guy, so it was a good style matchup. Then when he got beat a couple more times, they found a little bit easier people again, Daniel Carey and John DeJesus and Aiden Lee. So, like, they're stepping it up again, which is kind of interesting. The reason I circled this fight to be one to talk about is I sort of wonder if the amount of people who wrote off Aaron Pico and see Justin Gonzalez's 12-0 record is going to get us good odds on Pico. I will be legit here. I have no idea where they're going to post this line. I'm mostly just keeping an eye on it because I do like Pico in this fight. While I really like Justin Gonzalez and I do think he's a real threat, I think Pico has figured some things out. Like, he had to learn a lot on the fly, and I think he's not what they hyped him up to be, but he's damn good, and I think he's better than Justin Gonzalez here. I'm hoping when this posts, the books are high on Justin Gonzalez too, because I think getting Pico at a good number here might be possible, but again, I have no idea where they're going to post it. They might post Pico at -500. Obviously I'm not in on it there, but I am if this winds up being a close call.
What's the highest you would bet him? Do you have a range?
I don't think I would get in on him higher than, like, I don't know, -225. You know, Gonzalez is more legit than that, and plus it stops being like a real tempting looking bet there. Plus he's so erratic, like, you don't know if he's going to win with like a dominant finish in 4 seconds or a submission at the end of the third round or like the most boring decision you've ever seen. So, I don't even like props with Pico. So, I like Pico to win. I think he's the, if you, you know, gun to your head pick, definitely Aaron Pico, but I think it's all dependent on whether or not this line comes in anywhere near close to even.
This is the podcast where a lot of guns get pointed at Dan's head. Almost every episode, right?
Oh, every episode.
All right. Final fight that Dan wants for us to break down or is worthy to break down and he wants to give you a pick for is women's featherweight, Aline Blancow versus Pam Sorensen. Blancow, former title challenger in Bellator, Anger Fist is her nickname, which is hard to beat. 14-8, 8 knockouts, 1 submission. She's been subbed herself 5 times, so that is her Achilles heel. 5 out of 8 losses have come via submission. She's 7-4 in Bellator. She won via TKO her last fight. She used to fight up a weight class that would be featherweight. No, actually, I'm sorry. She used to fight at bantamweight. This fight is at, what did I say, featherweight? So she used to fight down a weight class, used to fight at a lower weight class. She was the Storm MMA champ. You a big Storm MMA fan, Dan?
I was not. No, I had no idea about Storm. It is. I know it's in Australia or New Zealand, but she's from there. From, yeah,
that's right. She's 4-4 as a pro boxer. She's got an inch of reach over Sorensen. Go to Sorensen now. Pam Bam Sorensen, 9-3, 1 knockout, 1 submission. So if you're picking her, you're probably not going to want to pick her via finish. She's not much of a finisher. She was 1-0 in Bellator. She's won 2 straight fights in 4 of 5. She was previously in Invicta, where she was their champion, where she went 3-2. She also was the KOTC, King of the Cage champ. She also used to fight down a weight class, so that's pretty much bantamweight and featherweight are pretty much interchangeable in the women's fighting ranks. She's 3 years younger, got an inch of height. Who you got in this one?
I really like this one, and I wanted to talk about this one because I like Arlene Blankwell, because I think she is so much faster than Pam Sorensen. And you mentioned she does kind of have the issues with the grappling defense, which is kind of why some people are not super high on her. But first of all, she's lost to some really good women that way, right? Chris Cyborg beat her that way. I mean, Julia Budd did to an extent. Marlos Conan, who is a fucking legend of the sport, beat her that way. So, like, she's got those holes, and I would say Pam Sorensen has those same holes. This is going to be a boxing match. I like Lenko, and I think I'm guessing she comes in as a favorite, but probably in, like, the low 200s, and I like a bet on her in that range too.
All right, so there you have it. So the picks are obviously Chris Cyborg, but there's no point. Well, it depends. We may have some high rollers listening to us. If you're a super high roller, like Superfan Jong, I'm sure is, and you have enough of a bankroll, sure, take Cyborg. It's pretty much easy money. He liked Tyrell Fortune, preferably via knockout if the straight line number is not good enough for you. He likes Aaron Pico up to about -225, and he likes Arlene Blancow, hopefully, what, -200 or less, or you wouldn't take it?
I might still be interested if it leaks into the 300s, but, like,
really?
would probably want to parlay it or something like that.
Yeah. Okay. Very, very good. So that is our first event, Bellator. Will you watch this event, Dan, or bits and pieces of it?
Bits and pieces or highlights on YouTube, one of the two.
Dan watches everything. It shows you his opinion on Bellator.
I mean, I will definitely watch what we're going to talk about next, which is LFA.
LFA 118, right? LFA 118. You a big LFA fan?
I love LFA, yeah.
I'm going to start watching more of it.
It's up there with, like, now Fury FC is kind of squeaking in there. Fury FC, CES, CES, Fury, LFA, CFFC. Those four, like, can't miss for me.
Well, he won't be missing this one. Hey, maybe Superfan John can go to it. It is in his neck of the woods, I think. Burbank, California. It's at the Los Angeles Burbank Marriott Convention Center. We're talking about LFA 118 Legacy Fighting Champion, Fighting Alliance, excuse me. Estrazulez versus Aaron. So we're going to break down the main event, which is a lightweight. Surprisingly, it's not a title fight. It seems every headline fight in LFA is for a vacant title because UFC steals her champs immediately, right?
Yeah, usually. Yep.
Yeah. So this one is not. This one's just a straight lightweight fight. We'll tell you Arthur Estrazulez first. He's 12-5, 2 knockouts, 8 submissions. He's been subbed himself twice. He is 2-1 over his last three. He lost his last fight. He was in PFL previously where he went 0-1. He also was in Bellator where he went 1-0. Tommy Aaron's nickname is the Spaniard. He is 9-5, 3 knockouts, 2 submissions. He's been knocked out himself 3 times. He's won 2 straight fights. He's 3-0 in LFA. He was 0-2 in Bellator. He used to fight late weight class down at featherweight. He's 5 years younger, and he's got 2 inches to reach. So what can you tell us about this one?
So first of all, I will just start by saying I have no idea, and nobody will ever have any idea where they're going to post lines on LFA or how they're going to post lines on LFA. So I'm not even going to pretend to tell you, like, the numbers I think are going to exist. But I will tell you straight up, I like Estrazulas in this fight. Tommy Aaron is a guy who kind of just, like, throws really wild, and it's made him fun to watch, but also – it, like, leaves him open to a lot of shit. And Estrazulas is, like, a very swarming, heavy grappler type who will pin you up against the cage and just wear on you. And he's kind of gotten caught a couple of times grappling against guys who can grapple with him. But I don't think Tommy Aaron is that. So unless Tommy Aaron comes out and, like, just wings some shots and, like, flatlines him, I think Estrazulas will be fine. So much so that I like him again. If it's anywhere under -200, I think that would be playable. And obviously, if he, for some reason, comes in as a dog, which, like I said, I have no idea where these post. But for me, I would line him as, like, a -170 favorite, and I would like him in that range.
Okay. Do they usually are the odds usually off a bit in LFA? Is there a opening to grab some good money?
I mean, it's just weird for me when we talk about LFA lines. Like, sometimes I'm like, oh, well, clearly, you know, so-and-so is a favorite because, you know, they have this backing. And actually, the one we're going to talk about next is one, you know, Askar, who was signed by the UFC, didn't wind up fighting due to not being medically cleared and a whole bunch of other things. But, like, a lot of times I think like, oh, he was signed by the UFC. He was, you know, he's a famous guy. He'll be a favorite. And then the lines come out and he's not. And I'm like, what the hell? And it's not necessarily because they're wrong lines, or they're just very unpredictable, I think. Like, the stuff that you would usually dictate, you know, the logic you would usually dictate for lines for UFC or Bellator just don't apply to, like, some of the regional level ones. Like, I don't know if bookies just have a better sense of people's skill at that level or who's giving them the lines here. But I do think, yeah, like, I think it's harder to tell what the lines are going to start at.
Okay, and as Dan said, Askar is the other fight we're going to break down. Bantamweight co-main event, Askar versus Leandro Gomez. Gomez is Pequeno Hulk, which means Little Hulk. He kind of looks like a Little Hulk, too, when you see pictures of him. You can see him painted green. He's totally the Hulk. He is 6-1, 2 knockouts, 2 submissions, never been finished in a fight. 3-0 in LFA. He's won 4 straight fights. He used to fight up at featherweight. This one is at bantamweight. And then Askar briefly was scheduled for fighting in UFC before it fell through, as Dan said. AK-47 is the nickname. He's 11-2 with 5 knockouts, 1 submission. Both of his losses have come via knockout. He's 2-1 in LFA. He's gone loss, win, loss over his last 3 fights. I think, yeah, we'll go with that. He's got TKO'd in his very last fight. He also used to fight up a weight class. He's 3 years younger. What are you thinking in this one?
I think that, so like I said, hard to tell what the lines are going to be because I would imagine Askar comes in as a favorite, as somebody who the UFC signed, had to fight Cody Stamann and then didn't get medically cleared. I think he'd be a favorite here, and I actually don't like him in this fight. I like Leandro Gomez. So if like Gomez comes in as a dog here, jump on it quick. That's a pick for me. He fights like a Hulk. He throws bombs constantly, and at, you know, in some ways, like when we talk about Tommy Aaron, that would be a concern, right? Like, because he's not playing enough defense, but also he's got both a great chin, and if somebody tries to take him down, he has excellent jiu-jitsu, like very good black belt jiu-jitsu out of Leandro Gomez. I've seen him hit a knee bar, and it was one of the nastiest looking knee bars, and that came after he just like swung wildly. The other thing you will see about this man too is he has got some weird reach, like really weird reach. Like if you just look at a picture of him, it looks like he can like itch his kneecaps without bending at the waist. It's like, go to Tapology and just look at the picture of him, because you'll get a little bit of a sense of it. Although like watching a YouTube fight of him would probably do better. But yeah, he's like a lot of fun to watch. He trains out of Kings MMA. He beat Yuma Horiuchi, who I am pretty high on as well. I think he's just going to go out there, throw bombs, and definitely take Askar out of his game.
And hopefully he is an underdog on the board, and you can make some cash on that. So that's 2 fights we're going to break down on LFA, and then you got you with, 4 on Bellator. So there you go. Super fans like Jong, you have your fix before we
actually give. That's your contender series without it being contender series.
Exactly. You just have to wait till Friday to cash your checks. Cash your bets. All right, that's enough. That's enough talking for one night for you people. Everyone go to bed. In the meantime, like I said, we'll be back on Wednesday. In the meantime, read all our stuff at sportsgamblingpodcast.com and at MMA-manifesto.com. If you haven't subscribed to our podcast feed yet, make sure you do that, MMA Gambling Podcast feed, and then you will get this podcast the second it drops rather than waiting a day or two for it to go out on the main SGPN feed. And make sure you follow us on Twitter and give us more compliments, as all our lovely fans have been doing. Much appreciated. Jeff Fox, writer, and he is Gumby Vreeland. Anything else we need to tell him before Wednesday, Vreeland?
Nah, you hit it all.
All right, that's good. What nicknames are we going to sign off with tonight? I guess I'll go back to Juicy Jeff. I'm Juicy Jeff. What do you want to be tonight, Dan?
Let's stick with Gumby.
He is Gumby Vreeland, and we will be back on Wednesday. Bye-bye.